Hi, I'm David Kaplan, and you're listening to the Sports Talk Live podcast. Enjoy the show. It's a Chevy Power Play. Now get over $8,600 total savings on a 2018 Chevy Silverado 1500 Crew Cab LT, plus an additional $2,500 in competitive owner cash. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com for details and score.
The comeback Cubbies take their show on the road after a 7-1 homestand to begin a six-game road trip that will carry them into the All-Star break, starting tonight in San Francisco. Cubs pregame live begins our coverage at 8:30 tonight. Then Len and JD have the call by McCovey Cove at 9 o'clock. Four men from Chicago are going to Washington. The White Sox are sending Jose Abreu, who is an All-Star starter, for the first time in his career. Meanwhile, the Cubs are sending three, John Lester, Wilson Contreras, and Javi Baez. But which of those All-Stars is the Cubs MVP this season? The Kings made an offer the Bulls couldn't refuse. Gar Pax matching the four-year, $78 million offer sheet to Zach LaVine. Was it the right call? We'll discuss it tonight, that and more on Sports Talk Live right now. Welcome into Sports Talk Live, presented by the Chevy Silverado. The Catman is currently on tour in Europe. I'm Luke Stuckmeyer. Let's meet the panel for today's show. From the Big Ten Unfiltered podcast, Seth Gruen, from the Tribune, David Haw, and US 99's Justin Roman. Guys, a pretty good homestand for the Cubs. They get going, right? Things are going great, and it seemed like there was a different hero every time. There were spark plugs in different places around this homestand.
Well, they won 15 of the last 20 at Wrigley. And I think you win 9 out of 11. They're all come from behind wins. And if you had told the Cubs are going on the last road trip before the All-Star break with injured Chris Bryant, injured Yu Darvish, and they really haven't had the starting pitching consistency that they wanted, and they are where they are, at a season high, I think 15 games over 500, they would take that. It's been a very encouraging homestand. So they go out with West with a little momentum.
Yeah, and I also feel that, like, kind of back in 2016, they were never out of a game. I feel that way again. You know, back-to-back come-from-behind victories. I was there yesterday at Wrigley, and you just never felt this team was out of it, and that's a good feeling.
Well, I think one thing that this little last stretch has imbued is that they're losing hard, which is what you both said. That said, and not to be the Debbie Downer here, I don't think that's the kind of baseball that can sustain for the next few months. I think that something's got to give, that they have to jump out and get out to some earlier leads, and to be honest with you, crush some teams.
Yeah, Joey's boys don't quit isn't going to work.
Yeah. You know?
That's a really nice sentiment in July. But I think you're right, Seth. I think they realize that for them to get to the playoffs, they can get to the playoffs sort of doing it this way, but their goals are higher than that. They're not going to win in the playoffs 100%. Unless their starting pitching is better than it has been.
I think that's also sort of the reason why, for a lack of a better term, they're sort of flying under the radar. I know they're the Cubs and they're a big-name team, but because they're in second place, even though they have the second-best record, people are talking about the Yankees. They're talking about the Red Sox. They still talk about the Astros. And the Cubs are still sort of that team nationally, I think, that maybe most people don't really believe in as a World Series contender,
you know what?
I think they should.
Let them talk about the Yankees and the Red Sox. Let us fly under the radar for a change, because you know what? Eventually, Brizzo is going to be Brizzo, and eventually I think we're going to get Yu Darvish back, and we're finally going to see what we paid for and get a true, at least number two out of him. And I think that at that point, we'll surprise a lot of teams, and we are the Cubs, you know?
Well, do you buy that scenario that maybe they're a little under the radar for at least the Cubs and a team that's, you know, good.
Under the radar nationally, maybe because of what's going on in the AL East and how unique that is and what a battle that is of maybe the two best teams in baseball. But here, I mean, no. And does that really matter? Do you really care what the perspective is nationally?
Right.
Does that take pressure off you? I don't think so.
Luke, they're not sneaking up on anybody.
No,
they're not sneaking up on anybody.
No, not in the National League.
Don't know if you noticed. Pretty popular bunch of young men.
Yeah, the ballpark is sold out.
And I would love to believe the narrative where, okay, Yu Darvish is going to, you know, rub his shoulder and flex his tricep, and all of a sudden he's going to be that number two starter. But that, to me, is even more mysterious or uncertain than, you know, whether or not Kyle Hendricks is going to get it or Tyler Chatwood's ever going to find the plate. Darvish is such a key guy in the second half, and yet that tells you how uncertain the second half could be pitching-wise.
And he's almost like the biggest trade you could make is getting back a healthy Yu Darvish, right?
Right.
And that uncertainty, to me, is why I think they have to make a big move. And I know this is unpopular, but I think that potentially means looking at moving Addison Russell. And I say that because personally, I don't believe that he's the shortstop of the future here. I think that Javi Baez has much more potential at the position. I know Russell's more so the grinder, the guy you trust, maybe in on a play-in, play-out basis. But I believe Baez is the long-term answer there. You knew that not all of these guys would end up with this team for 8, 9, 10
years.
I
don't know, Seth. I mean,
I don't know that Russell gets you a top-line player just by himself.
But he's the cornerstone of said deal.
But let's look at, okay, so this is fluid, but the whole conversation about who you trade and what kind of deal you make. Manny Machado was the big guy in May, and we had that big conversation when he came to town. At that point, I thought Addison Russell was more expendable than I probably believe right now.
I agree.
Responded to that really well. And if you look at his numbers since that point, it's almost like that. I don't know if it's cause-effect, but it certainly seems that way. He responded to that.
He's having a sneaky good year.
Yeah.
He really is. You know, and also, he's really, really young still. I mean, I don't think he's tapped his potential yet. I'm with you. I think a few months ago, I was maybe ready to pull the plug. But I think he's your shortstop of the future. You could do a lot worse than Addison Russell the way he's playing right now.
I don't think he's Barry Larkin, which is what a lot of people said, which is what Billy Beane supposedly said when he executed the trade. Sometimes you got to move good players, and great GMs have the expectation that they can reacquire guys.
But you're not
like
missing
that.
Barry Larkin on this team. You're not really missing. Right now, the way the Cubs are constituted and the way they're playing, I mean, your weakness is not you need another middle infielder.
Yeah, I agree with that.
But if you Darvish does not come back and is not the player that the Cubs expected him to be when they signed him this offseason, do you believe they can win a World Series?
If Quintana pitches like they thought Quintana could.
Yeah, and Hendricks finds what he's lost the past few months.
Or do you believe that they can win a World Series without Russell but with a frontline type
starter?
Here's
the thing. I think those are good questions. Those are fair questions. I think that everything is about risk and alternative. But I think the risk involved in giving away assets that are young assets isn't worth it. I think your more worthwhile gamble is thinking that Quintana is going to pitch like the pitcher he has to be. Hendricks is going to be the guy that he has been in August and September in the past several years. And maybe then you have three starters that are big-time clutch starters.
Seth, I'll give you the question that we were tossing around the newsroom the other day. You want a big trade. Would you trade Javi Baez, who has been the team?
No. The answer is no.
Right?
No.
For Jacob DeGrom for three postseasons. Straight up, one for one. There's your frontline starter. He's the ace. I wouldn't do it. I thought Cap was gone, Luke. I wouldn't do it either
because you're tough. I believe Javi Baez really gives you a game-winning type, and I've said this before, a game-winning type play almost every night, whether it's on the base path, in the field, or at the plate.
But I think that's the type of guy you have to give up to get a frontline starter. That's why I wouldn't do it.
But the risk of an arm blowing out, too, a safer bet is Javi staying healthy than a DeGrom staying healthy.
I will offer this. There are a lot of what-ifs associated with the pitching staff right now. And I'll say this. You talk about giving away young assets. The Cubs traded Gleyber Torres, who before he got hurt was the number two prospect in all of baseball. That's a pretty good young asset you're giving up. They traded for Aldous Chapman, who helped them win a World Series.
They don't win it without him.
No. So if you move Russell and you acquire the type of starter that helps you win a World Series, another World Series, to me it's worth it.
But I don't know that person's out there. I don't know that that starter is available. I just don't.
I just don't know what the deal is that you would make.
And I also wonder, realistically, is that feasible to even consider? I don't know that it is. I think that the Cubs are more likely to fill in some gaps, maybe get a bat, maybe get a late inning bullpen arm, and then get a guy who's probably more fourth, fifth starter quality than top of the rotation guy, and kind of gamble on the assets that they have right now to come through better than they have in the first half.
I believe in that. The only thing I would say about that is that we do know that Theo likes to make trades. Mm. And he's not afraid to make a big splash.
Theo likes to be smart more than he likes to make trades. And right now, the smart play to me is not overreacting to a first half where you've had a lot of bad things go wrong for your pitching rotation that you thought was going to be the best that Joe Maddon's ever coached in Chicago. it's been the most disappointing.
But look at where we are. That's the thing. Is like so many things have gone wrong with this team.
No.
But we're like right in the thick of it. If not, I would say probably the most favorite team in the NL. I mean, I really feel that the Brewers are not going to – we're going to win the division. I'm not scared of Milwaukee.
How about the Cubs All-Star? So they send three guys, and they're not the two guys who you would say are the cornerstone of the franchise. Yeah. You know, it's not Rizzo. It's not Bryant. It's the – young players who really bring the athleticism and excitement to the game. Javi Baez, when you watch him, that's why I mentioned him in a trade. I think he's untouchable at this point because of the energy that he brings to a team even when they're down.
This season, I'd agree with you. I think he's worked his way into that. And somewhere last night, Jim Hendry popped the cork.
You know?
This is a guy, yeah. These are Hendry guys. Yep. You know, Javi Baez was drafted by Hendry, one of the last things he did. Wilson Contreras was a guy who was signed and played third base, and then they converted him to a catcher. Now he's an all-star. So this is a testament to player development, patience, and the talents of two guys who have rubbed some people the wrong way this year.
I like that. I think Jesse Rogers put out a tweet saying the two Cubs all-stars position players are the ones that the old school baseball fans are saying played the game the wrong way, right? Well, obviously the fans love how they play, and they play hard, and they're deserving.
And you could argue they're the two most fun to watch.
Absolutely.
If there were more guys like Contreras and Baez, baseball would be a more popular sport.
Agreed.
And this has been a conversation for several seasons. Bryce Harper has brought it up. Baseball needs them. Mm-hmm. Baseball needs guys like that. Okay, you can't hang on to antiquated values that are losing a generation.
And as good as Javi and Wilson Contreras have been, I do think that you could look at John Lester, and he may be the most valuable Cub.
Yeah.
Based on what we talked about earlier, the rotation has been a disappointment. Lester's been the guy you go out there and has been steady. He's been everything, one of those rare free agents that has, fulfilled the major contract and big dollars.
And gotten better as time's gone on, because I don't think anybody expected this season out of Lester, because I think we signed Darvish and you had Hendricks starting a game one. I think you thought maybe Lester kind of fell down the depth chart, but not at all. He's gotten better.
Motivated him.
Yeah.
I love the Twitter reaction of Contreras finding out he was going to the All-Star game.
Mm-hmm.
Holding to himself, just kind of in tears. It's a guy, as you mentioned, that really came from a dead end at a position player, and they converted him over like the Cubs have done with so many guys over the years, but he's really taken to it and he really appreciates where he's at.
Yeah. Looks like a guy who's been catching all his life. It's hard to believe that he's a converted catcher because he's so natural and his arm's so powerful.
And people, when you enter a system as a catcher, out of college or out of high school, it takes a lot longer to develop at that position in general. So to make that kind of switch is just a testament to him as a player and how hard he's worked. As cliche as it sounds, you got to do that to accomplish what he's done.
What surprised me as much as anything with him is that when he first came up, he had such exuberance and he had a veteran pitching staff.
Mm-hmm.
And I wondered if there was an inevitable clashing in the getting to know phase. And he's really become a guy who's been a little steadier. And that part of the process you don't question anymore.
I do think when the season started, if you had to ask me which player was going to have the breakout MVP type season, I still thought it was Contreras, but if you had asked me that today, it'd be Baez.
Absolutely. I think he's the most exciting player in baseball. I agree. Every single game, there's something he will do that I've never seen before, or I can't even believe what I saw. Like he's energy, he's a great player, and he's only getting better because, again, he's still young too.
And where I think he's so valuable, and people kind of lose sight of this idea that baseball is this game of streaks, right? Just because you're a 300 hitter doesn't mean you're getting on base 3 out of every 10 times.
Right.
That's not how it works. Baez, to me, is a player that doesn't necessarily slump. And I know he strikes out a lot. But again, when you go back to what he can do with his glove, and even if he walks and gets on base, I mean, the pressure he puts on an opposing pitcher, to me, has just such an impact on the game that, again, I go back to that sentence I keep recycling. He makes a winning play every night.
And what he can do with his glove at multiple positions too. You've seen it at second, short, and third. That's rare.
And David, especially playing for Joe Maddon.
Yeah.
Has he exceeded the player you thought he'd be?
Well,
about 5 years ago.
He was part of this organization. You thought he was going to be an MVP guy. Well, I think the odd thing about Javi Baez was that it took him this long to get to this point. He's always been valuable, but I think that we all exaggerate in Chicago and every major in sports market, but he came in thinking this is who he is. Mm-hmm. He's going to be an MVP candidate and do these things every day. And I think now you're seeing a guy fulfill that potential and meet those expectations.
I think when the Cubs took over and Theo took over and they brought in Joe Maddon, it was interesting that a lot of people thought, Javi's not going to be the guy that fits into their system.
Not their guy.
He's not their type of guy. He's not their type of player. And Maddon, the first person he talked about was Javi Baez.
Yeah.
I need more of that guy on my team. And it's interesting that it's kind of worked out.
And he compares him to Manny Ramirez, which is ridiculous, but it shows you how much he thinks of him.
Yeah. Right. Now, Russell's not Sabo, and he's not Manny, but he is more athletic than Manny. And we'll see if he becomes that better.
Chris Sabo?
Chris Sabo? Who brought up Chris Sabo?
He was good. Barry Larkin. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Barry Larkin. I was like, who Chris Sabo? Chris Sabo?
Barry Larkin.
Yeah. I'll take 90s Reds for 500, Alex.
Yeah.
Tom Browning.
Barry Larkin.
Barry Larkin with more power, they said. But Russell came out. Yeah. They were saying Barry Larkin with more power. And that's one thing about Addison Russell's game that I'm a little disappointed in is the power hasn't been there this year or last year for that matter. But it's there. It was there in 16. So I feel like it's there. I just don't know where he went right now.
And look, those comparisons were very unfair to him.
Of course.
There's no doubt about it. I don't know that anybody had loftier comparisons associated with him among all these Cub prospects. But nonetheless, you have to assess what he is. And, you know, I go back to my original statement. He's playing well. Maybe now is the time to move him if you don't believe he's going to hit that potential. And that's for Theo to decide.
Who do you compare David Bodie to?
Also, Chris Sabo, and he's better than him, too. We'll have more on the Cubs at 6:45. Jesse Rogers is going to join us live from the ballpark in San Francisco tonight, and we'll talk to him. So up next, the Bulls match Sacramento's offer sheet for Zach LaVine, but was the Kings' ransom too much, or will it be a bargain? Mark Schanowski going to drop by in studio next on Sports Talk Live. Chris Sabo was a heck of a player.
He was great. Rookie of the year.
Great goggles.
I think Cole, he's more...
up the heat and turn on STL. On NBC Sports Chicago, host David Kaplan brings his no-nonsense opinion to the table in a half hour on the topics that are trending with our teams.
We got the most mismanaged basketball team in the history of the world.
Which franchise made the gutsiest draft day move? I think Pack wanted to do this and he finally got his way.
Sports Talk Live, presented by the Chevy Silverado. Weeknights at 6 on NBC Sports Chicago.
We're back on Sports Talk Live, and look who's back. Zach LaVine with the Bulls. They matched the four-year, $78 million offer sheet that the Kings gave to him. The Bulls pony up. They pay their guy. Now we wonder, is it the right move? Welcome back to Sports Talk Live, presented by the Chevy Silverado. We bring in Mark Schanowski, Mr. Basketball.
Mr. NBA.
Mr. NBA.
That's right.
Mr. Basketball. College, high school, you know it all, right, Mark. Let's be true. Was it the right move?
I think so. David and I are in the same camp. Obviously, they made the trade for Jimmy Butler last year. Zach LaVine was the key player coming back in that trade. And even though he played 24 games with the Bulls, was a little bit inconsistent with his production, this is a 23-year-old shooting guard who was really having a breakout season with the Minnesota Timberwolves before he got hurt. I think with a full year to work out, a full summer to work out, a full training camp to get used to playing with Chris Dunn and Lowry Markin and some of the other young guys, I think he's going to be worlds better next season.
I just don't think you can give up on 23-year-old assets when you're in the midst of a rebuild, especially when you've identified one as being central part of that. And that's what they did the night they traded Jimmy Butler. So they backed themselves into a corner. They might have overpaid a little bit. The difference between what they signed him to and what they offered wasn't significant enough to look at and say, oh boy, they really got in a bad situation here. So I thought they did what they had to do. Now he's got to fulfill his end of the bargain.
Yeah, and I think, too, that, again, he is so young, but I think that the sky's the limit for this guy. And I love the injury protection clause in the contract. I think that kind of is a bit of a safe haven for you guys because, you know, obviously in Chicago we've dealt with an injured star before. So to have that protection, I think it makes the contract even more safe. Plus, the Bulls overspent, or quote-unquote overspent, they have money, right? So who else are they spending it on this year? I feel like this is a guy that, if he hits, you got a young stud for 4 years.
I thought it was a no-brainer. I think you make that trade not to have Zach LaVine last year, but to be in the driver's seat this summer. Now my question to you is, do you believe he can coexist with Lauri Markkanen?
Yeah, I think so. Obviously, he's going to be the perimeter threat. He's a three-point shooter, 37% for his career, where Lowry's going to do most of his work on the post. I think right now, they're, as David mentioned, they're developing young talent. They added Wendell Carter in this draft, and he's been impressive in the first two Summer League games. I think right now, it's a process of acquiring as much talent as you can have. And Zach is going to be an offense first guy. He wants the ball in his hands. I think it's more of an issue with him and Chris Dunn than it is with him and Lowry.
I guess I should say you hear rumblings of the fact that, you know, maybe he was a little miffed that the Bulls, you know, threw all the support behind Markkanen as he emerged this year.
I think somebody talked to him after the Kings wrote him an offer sheet, and mm-hmm. the Bulls didn't. And I think that you see, you know, he's still 23. And I think some of those things came through. His comments that sounded maybe a little bit like, oh, gee, they don't want me. A chip on his shoulder is not a bad thing for a player to have.
Every guy who signs an offer sheet says the same thing.
And everybody,
I wish they'd just let me go to the team that
exactly.
sent me the offer sheet.
And everyone should be so poor that they have to sign for $20 million a year.
And the right. fan outrage is what really gets to me. I mean, it's first of all, it's not your money.
Right.
You know, don't worry about it.
Right.
And the salary cap is going up, so that $19.5 million is going to be a smaller percentage of their salary cap in years going forward. If you find out in the next couple of years that Zach is not a great fit with Chris Dunn, Lowry Market, and Wendell Carter Jr., you can move that contract. It is tradable. But I think they're still excited about his potential. Remember, he was averaging almost 19 points a game with the Timberwolves when he got hurt. He was shooting close to 40% from the three-point line. This is a guy that has unique talents. You're not going to just find a guy like that walking around in the street.
And that's what sort of bothered me about some of the reaction, you know, was that people were quick to make judgments based on 24 games mm-hmm. of a guy coming off right. major knee surgery. Not that you're making excuses for him, but clearly he was on a minutes limit. So there was sort of a forced amount of time he had kind of in his head. He wasn't playing naturally, trying to make things
and
happen.
The Bulls had zero expectations. They really right. kind of told him.
And not a ton of talent around him either.
And it was a new team, so the chemistry still had, you had to mm-hmm. gel with some guys and stuff. So, yeah, I agree. I think that, and now before the injury, this contract is almost a no-brainer, right? Because he had a really good year in Minnesota. And you're kind of like, okay, it makes sense. But I think that the potential is big enough for them to take this risk, because if you hit, you've got a stud for four more years.
And then how much do they have left? Still $40 million to try and get a max player mm-hmm. next summer?
Yeah, it all depends on how some of the future commitments shake out. They're working on a contract extension for Bobby Portis. If they extend him, he's going to be in at least the $10 million per season range. That's going to cut into your cap. They're going to get Robin Lopez and Omer Asik off the books next year, which is going to free up a lot of money. The projections right now are about $40 million. I know some fans are thinking about this pie-in-the-sky scenario where Jimmy Butler and Kyrie Irving are friends, and they're going to come back to Chicago, and they're going to lead the Bulls to championship number 7. That's not going to happen, you know. And why give away a player that you have in hand, hoping to get
two
that you're never going
to
get?
To count on something like that. When in number one, they got rid of Jimmy Butler. Mm-hmm. You think that they would want to bring him back?
Not necessarily.
Not this front office. Number two, when have the Bulls ever gone out and gotten two free agents in the same summer?
One big one. And which is another reason.
We got Kyle Korver and Keith Bogans, remember?
That was big.
But with us not really signing the marquee free agent, which is another reason why I think you take a chance on LaVine, because if he turns into a superstar, you have him at a reasonable contract. And I think the upside is worth the risk by far and away.
Wendell Carter Jr. had his first summer league game. What did you see? And what did you like? There were a lot of block shots, I know that.
You know, I was really impressed with him, because when he played his one season at Duke, he was in the huge shadow of Marvin Bagley III. He came in, Wendell Carter, thinking that he was going to be the future player on the front line, and then Marvin Bagley reclassified. He was able to come in the same class that Carter came in, and all the national hype surrounded Bagley. You know, he's a little bit more athletic. He can explode to the rim and get some highlight reel dunks. But Carter looked really athletic, and especially in that first game against Cleveland. He blocked 5 shots in that game. He knocked down a couple of three-point shots. He had 2 steals. He looked good in screen and roll. I mean, he checked the boxes. But it is summer league.
Rookies,
you don't want to get too excited.
Rookies playing rookies. Rookies against rookies, you're a little careful. But he did look athletic, and he is healthy.
So you'd rather him play good in the summer league than bad, right? So I'm excited as well. The blocks excited me. I'm at every single game, as you guys are. And I didn't see – I mean, the blocks just from the 2 summer league games was exciting to me, because I didn't see that at the UC last year.
Because people wondered if he was going to be a rim protector, and the other question was, could he switch out against smaller players? And he looked good doing that. Granted, he wasn't playing all-star caliber players, but still, it was a good first sign.
Okay, so you have this young nucleus and all this quote-unquote potential. Is it attractive enough for a top-flight free agent to come here next summer? Because we just talked about the Bulls' track record.
Well, you know, the one thing you worry about is that it seems like all these players are kind of plotting behind the scenes to join forces. Mm-hmm. You know, the Jimmy Butler, Kyrie Irving thing, I'm sure they have had discussions about playing together. And LeBron James, I'm sure, talked to Paul George before he re-upped in OKC. I know he's been talking to Kawhi Leonard. So these guys do want to join forces. I think it would be great to have that $60 million available to bring in two guys, but it's just not realistic. You can't operate that way.
So the best case scenario is the guys they have turn into the max players, right? You need Markkanen to be a star. You need LaVine to be a star.
Well, look at the Golden State formula. Everybody talks about how they're able to put that team together. They drafted Steph Curry. I think it was number 7 overall. Klay Thompson was the 10th or 11th pick. They got Draymond Green in the second round. And then they added the big piece, obviously, in Kevin Durant. The only reason they were able to do that was because of a cap spike. Philadelphia, similar way, building through the draft. If you have a solid nucleus, 3, 4, 5 players that you got through the draft, then maybe you're good enough where a free agent says, you know what, that's a team I can win with.
And people can say the Bulls aren't in a position to win a championship next year. Who is?
Right.
Who's going to beat the Warriors next year anyway?
One team, Golden State, is prime for that, right?
Incremental improvement is important when you have, you know, people fear the, you know, oh, we're going to be happy with the return to relevance, but that matters. Mm-hmm. And the Bulls are doing what they have to do to build a contender. And then when you get to that point, maybe something happens. You cannot predict everything.
See, here's my concern, and there's really nothing the Bulls can do about it because, you know, they're headed in the only direction they can be headed in, but you mentioned Philadelphia, you've got Boston, you've got maybe this next generation of teams after LeBron James maybe, you know, gets into his late 30s. Can the Bulls catch up to that? Because right now, the way I see it, they're very far from even those teams, that second tier.
Well, the thing that's really changed over the last decade or so is now it's either you're trying to contend for a championship or tear it down and rebuild. There's no in-between. It used to be that there was a badge of honor in winning a playoff round, you know, getting in the conference semifinals and showing improvement from year to year, especially when you have a younger team. Now it seems to be if you're not in contention for a championship, you should fire the coach, get rid of the front office, and, you know, try to get all future draft picks instead of worrying about trying to add to your talent base and seeing veterans grow. And that's one thing that John Paxson's been very successful with is building through the draft and getting teams to a level where they can compete for those first and second round playoff victories. The criticism, of course, is they haven't been able to get to a finals.
You're a year away from, you know, hitting reset, and I think they're removed from that. And I think that, yeah, everyone wants to know that, Seth. You're right, because you got the Sixers and you got the Celtics, and they look like they're positioned. But look what the Sixers went through to get to that point.
They're back for a long
Celtics,
time.
Too.
A lot.
So you wonder, I mean, are the Bulls going to be, you know, competitive with those two teams quicker? You know, they're not going to go through 3 more years of tanking. I think next year they will be competitive for a playoff spot.
Well, you have to find the star, too, because you remember with Philadelphia, they missed on some picks.
Yeah.
Nerlens Noel, Jahlil Okafor turned out to be, you know, that pick didn't work out at all. And then now Markelle Fultz, we'll see what becomes of him. Not every guy you take in the top 10 of the draft is going to be a hit. Mm. And to this point, with Lauri Markkanen and in the early signs on Wendell Carter, you're hoping that they've got two foundation pieces.
Do you think they make the playoffs this year?
I think they're going to be right on the fringe of it.
Yeah.
I mean, they'll be in that 7 to 10 range. We'll just have to see how it shakes out.
I'm a total Chicago homer, full disclosure, but I really think that they could at least take the 8 seed. I mean, I think the East is wide open, and, you know, these young guys got something to prove, and I hope they learn to win together, and we could have a fun year in Chicago.
Yeah, after the Wade Rondo signing, it's hard to argue with anything the Bulls have done. Most of those moves after signing Dwayne Wade,
right,
which didn't go well, after
that. Was out of desperation.
But after that, things have gone pretty well.
Well, once they picked the lane.
Once they picked the lane,
right?
That season wasn't necessarily one I would look at and say everything went well.
Oh, yeah, I meant after that disaster.
I'm with you. Once they hit the button kind of reset when they traded Jimmy Butler, since then, they've done a lot of things that you can say, okay, I get this.
Just the Butler trade alone was phenomenal. I mean, look at the Butler trade now.
Unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
Because you look at a player like Jimmy Butler, you don't get equal value for a guy like that. We're sitting here talking about essentially how hard it is to acquire a superstar. To move him and to get the young assets they did, I thought was remarkable.
Who would you rather have right now? Jimmy Butler looking at a max deal or 3 assets that you think
are three assets?
Okay.
There's no doubt about it.
They should have made the move maybe a year earlier would be the only argument.
But the key is that they hit the draft with Markkanen. I mean, if they had taken Jonathan Isaac, who went 6th to Orlando, you'd be going, oh, my gosh, you got this project. Yeah. It might be, you know, 4 years away from being a player. You have to hit in the draft, and that's the biggest thing that can help teams sustain their talent base is because you've got those guys under control for 4 years at an affordable rate.
Mr. NBA has spoken. Mark Schanowski, thanks for stopping by.
All right.